cutting to the chase. Thank you very much, Don Clevin. 1010, good morning. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend in Chicago. Initially written to the tune other than Londonderry Air, this song was written first in 1910. There's a lot of legend that goes with Danny Boy. Tom Jones' version isn't bad, is it? Various suggestions exist as to the true meaning of Danny Boy. Some have interpreted the song to be a message from a parent to a son going off to war or uprising, as suggested by the reference to the pipes calling Glenn to Glenn. But there's another, I'm just reading from a Wikipedia, the 1918 version of the sheet music included alternative lyrics, so that Danny Boy is only to be sung by a lady, which would make you think it's not about a son going off to war. In spite of this, it's unclear what the original intent was when the author, Frederick Weatherly, wrote the words to Danny Boy. But it's what you do in Chicago on St. Patrick's Day weekend. Yeah, you can just lose that now, Griff. By the way, is Joe Brand there? Hey, Joe, are you there?
I'm here. Do you got me?
Yeah, we're just testing the microphone for you, Joe. Where exactly are you?
I am at the Phoenician. It's in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's the most glamorous, beautiful hotel I have ever used my brother-in-law's points on, and I can't find a Ethernet connection for the life of me.
Yeah,
you really challenge your people's skills when you go up to the concierge at 3 in the morning and try to tell them your dilemma and end up walking through just about every meeting room that this place has and finding absolutely nothing what you need.
I'm glad you were able to join us this morning.
Me too. And I appreciate everyone's patience with me today, everyone here in Arizona, and everyone out there at the station as well.
We're glad that you're out there covering the White Sox. We are, what is it now, 17 days away from opening day, something like that?
Just 12 now, John.
12, yeah. You know, I've been following the countdown via Roger Badish's. Every day he tweets another baseball uniform, and it has on the uniform, you know, the jersey number is how many days are left. So I see all of these famous players counting down. So 12, is that it, did you say?
Yeah, 12. I'm trying to think of who was, I feel like somebody from the 05, Pierzynski, right? Pierzynski was number 12.
I don't know which one he tweeted out. I'll have to go back and check. But baseball's right around the corner. It is, of course, St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. The river was dyed green. I watched it from our 18th story studio window here, and it was really fun to sort of watch it from way up high because we're at Columbus Avenue. So they come right down to Columbus Avenue, do a U-turn, and then head back towards Michigan Avenue on the Chicago River. And it's pretty funny because there's a lot of people now in kayaks and all kinds of boats are traversing up and down the river, and a lot of people are standing along the river banks and on the bridge, and they're all watching the green water. There's really nothing else going on. I mean, it is pretty cool to see how dramatically green it gets when they use this. Just 40 pounds of an orange powder mixed with water turns green. It was accidentally discovered in the 1960s, and the couple of guys that figured it out have kept it as sort of a family secret, and those two families have been the principal architects of turning the river green for the city of Chicago ever since. So a few boats come up and down, and they sort of squirt this green water. They mix it with the dye and then squirt it back into the river, and then the boats come by and kind of churn it up, churn it up, churn it up, and then the water just sits there green for a couple of days, and it's a sort of very bright Irish green right now. It's a perfect color. It's, you know, I'm not a big Irish guy. I'm not a big St. Patrick's Day guy, but it is a very fun tradition in Chicago. And so they churned it all up. I posted a picture of it as they were doing it on my Facebook page, or pardon me, on my Twitter account. So if you follow me on Twitter, I'm WGN King John. You'll see our view of it from up high. It's kind of neat, too, because the sun is shining brightly right now, and it's casting these very dramatic shadows along the river. So you have the bright green with sort of these angular shadows going into the water. It almost looks like a pow from Batman, where you have a bright color with the jagged edges, and it's, anyway, something to see from up here. And you can see it, too, if you follow me on Twitter. So that's a little bit of our St. Patrick's Day nod. There's a nice story about it in the CNN front page today about the guys and the history and the legend of the dying of the river in Chicago, if you want to read that. And we'll feature maybe a little more Tom Jones or some Irish music as we work our way through the day. By the way, last night I was at
the traditional Irish tunes of Tom Jones. I like that.
I know.
We'll celebrate with some more Tom Jones later on.
I know. That's what I do when I go, okay, Irish music, Danny Boy, Tom Jones. Not Irish. So I'm off the rail now.
I don't know specifically his heritage. Who's to say?
Yeah. The Irish know. By the way, last night we were at the restaurant that was judged in the Chicago Tribune Reader's Poll to be the very best Mexican restaurant in Chicago, Mi Tocoya. It's in Logan Square. Figure Diversi and the Kennedy right over there on Logan Square. There's this restaurant called Mi Tocoya. And as I recall, it got as many "that's the best Mexican restaurant in Chicago" votes as all of the others in the Reader's Choice Poll and the Tribune combined. It only seats, I went back and read Phil Vitale's review, 38 people. When you walk in, it is a bright, colorful, upbeat, noisy little place. But it's very fun. This is not your mother's ground beef, onions, and taco seasoning mix, by the way. This is, for instance, the four of us that went out last night had squid taco, Brussels sprouts, spaghetti squash. I went with a steak burrito because I'm not into this fancy food. There was stuff that was brought to our table, and I went, okay, what's that? The guacamole we had was really good. I had a margarita that was delicious. The second margarita I had was also delicious. And so Mi Tocoya did pass. It's one of those small places, though. Everything is small plates now. Everything is shared. I'm not a big share guy either, so I didn't free up a lot of my... Oh, and then I also had a bone marrow thing with short ribs and potatoes and carrots. And somehow that's a Mexican dish, and it was really delicious. Also this week, I just wanted to mention, I went to the Russian Tea Room. If you walk out of the Art Institute right through the Two Lions and go straight on to Adams Street, about a half a block down, so figure Michigan and Adams, there's that place called the Russian Tea Room, which just celebrated its 25th anniversary. And it's kitschy, and it feels very Russian when you walk in. Ornate chandeliers in a small room with dark-colored wallpaper and booths, and everybody sort of has that East European vibe. When I walk in for the 25th anniversary celebration this week, they hand me a shot glass of horseradish vodka. Who's had horseradish vodka before? Don, have you ever had a good sip of horseradish vodka?
No, but it is making me thirsty.
I'll bet it's not.
I've combined the two before.
Yeah, I've been in the room with the two before. Like, I'll drink vodka and I have horseradish on my, you know, beef sometimes.
Imagine how clear your sinuses would be after that, though.
I'm telling you, buddy, that happened. So I said, okay, I'm going to be a good player here. I'll go ahead and take a sip of your horseradish vodka. But I looked at the guy and go, really? Horseradish? Vodka? He goes, yeah, but it's not as horseradishy as you think. It's very horseradishy.
You know what's not very horseradishy either is just vodka.
Yeah, I know.
We could I know a way to eradicate this whole problem. Just not to have it in there at all. So it was, though.
It was. But it was kind of cool.
Sounds kind of good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you go to the Russian Tea Room, get this. You know, maybe get something else then after that. But I recommend it just because that's the featured beverage. It's their best seller. And it's fun to do. You might not get a second one, but you'll be happy that you had the first. And you will do this. You'll go, whoo, okay. You'll
nice.
Do that.
Nice.
You'll do that.
It's been brought to my attention that Tom Jones is Welsh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's not Irish. I told you, the Irish will know. Was that angry call that you just took? Was that sad look you had on your face a moment ago?
No. It was not that angry. No, it was a very cordial call, and I appreciated the information.
Yeah.
She did say, that's not what Irish people really listen to. And I said, I know.
We know. This is John Williams, that's all. And I'm sorry, I'm not a big fan. I'm not going to finish that sentence. I was going to say.
I'm digging this hole for no reason.
I really don't love Irish music, but I'm happy for the day. So I played a little Danny Boy. And finally, one of the places that I just went to I wanted to mention real quick, and that is Lucky Strike, which is the new bowling, ping pong, billiards, arcade, bar, restaurant, which is on the second floor of that new building on Addison, right across from Wrigley Field. Wrigleyville is transforming itself. And if you haven't been there in the last 12 months, 18 months, but even 6 months, you will be surprised at how tight, narrow, and built up and different it has become over there. Not all of that is bad. Some of it is. But this Lucky Strike place is a going concern. So on the second floor, and when you are there, you will overlook Addison and whatever they do outside there at Wrigley Field. You'll be able to see the L stop. You'll be able to see Wrigley Field. You'll be able to have a drink or a sandwich there, play ping pong there, stuff like that. I was amazed at how many arcade games they had, but I guess that's what you do there. It's called Lucky Strike, and it just opened this week in Wrigleyville on Addison. Okay, Griff said you got to take a break. We do. And then I just want to play a clip from Steve Cochran's show this week where he and his listeners revealed what their individual quirks were. It was very funny.
One last thing about the Tom Jones song. You got muted by somebody who called in and said, look, I know he doesn't like or whatever, but yeah. I'm just saying when that song came on,
yeah,
it was Alexa mute. You got muted.
No kidding. I'm sorry.
I may have just inadvertently muted some people's things,
don't
too.
Do that.
Sorry.
Don't even say that. There's a story in the Tribune today about the anxiety high school kids have trying to get into the right colleges. And that's just the usual stuff of stress and making grades and stuff like that. To say nothing of the anxiety now people have about somebody cheating and getting ahead of them in line because their parents are connected or wealthy. Do you see that there's a woman in California who is suing Felicity Huffman and Laura Loughlin for $500 billion because her son, who is now hiding under his cover somewhere, didn't get into the school of his choice? She's suing those two women for $500 billion. This week, we had a woman on who is a college admissions counselor, an advisor, like, okay, what should you be doing? And it's fascinating what she has to say. We got so many interesting calls and texts. We invited her back. She's in our studio after 10:30. We'll do the news at 10:30 or so. By the way, Steve Cochran, the other day, was for some reason asking his listeners to text in what their quirks were, their funny little eccentricities. I was positively charmed by it. Here are highlights from Cochran's show.
So many quirks. So little time. 6-3-0 in a booth at a restaurant. I can't sit on the outside because I feel like I'll fall out of the booth. 6-3-0, my husband can't eat shellfish because he's afraid no matter what it is, he's going to get squirted in the face. 8-4-7, I want my shoes to face the same way after I take them off. When I count change for customers, I couldn't start or end with a penny. 7-0-8, the food on the plate absolutely cannot touch and I won't wear the same color pants twice during a week. 7-0-8, I won't use the hand dryer. We had one of those from earlier. 6-3-0, I never eat in front of people. I only nibble. 6-3-0, I won't let anyone mail a letter for me if they're going to the post office. I have to watch it go in the box. 414. This is literally the only toilet paper text we got all morning. I thought there'd be a bunch of these. Toilet paper roll must roll out, not in. 708, I can't eat ice cream in the winter or soup in the summer. 773, I don't like to spend too much money at once. So if I go to the store and it's going to be a big bill, I'll only get half the stuff and go twice so I can have it in two smaller. 217, no pickles can touch my food ever. 219, my husband's 62 years old. He drives a 97 Jimmy. What is that, GMC?
That's a GMC truck.
Yeah. He has a flip phone. He only has a phone because his mother got sick and it freaked him out. He now calls her every day, but he's not happy about it. 847, I need the light switches in the off position when the light is off. It can be a challenge when the bank of lights is controlled by multiple switches. It's also a challenge when people know you have this quirk and they like to screw with you. Can't go to bed until all the switches are in the right position. 815, I can't eat mac and cheese without ketchup. And I have to make the bed every morning no matter what. 219, the windshield wipers have to be all the way down when the car's turned off.
Yeah. I had an old Chevette that didn't go all the way down. Drove me nuts. I had to like stick my hand out there and push it down.
773, I have to smell my food before I eat it. Also, I can never be in a room with a mirror if the light is off. This 219, doesn't matter where I am, if somebody coughs, even in the grocery store, I'll get at least two aisles away until the germs go away.
Don't get on an airplane.
Steve, I'm so freaked out by chemicals in my food, I make my own bread. 815, I always show up an hour early to work, sometimes 2 hours early.
They must have borrowed the page from your book.
Again, twins. We're like twins.
Cochran deserves that. And it goes on and on and on. Thank you, Steve. It's 10:30. Okay, we'll go into the newsroom, catch you up on the stories that matter. And then after that, let's talk a little bit about the games people play to get into college these days. Thank you, Don. It's 10:39. We're in the Allstate Showcase Skyline Studio overlooking the Chicago River. It's just such a pretty scene downtown right now. The sky is blue. We all wish it was a little warmer. Lord knows on St. Pat's Day, sometimes it's been much warmer than this, but we do have some bright sunshine, some small little white clouds. The sunlight is splashing against the tall buildings downtown, and then this Kelly green ribbon of water is snaking its way through the downtown. It's just fun. It's positively lovely, and so many people are partaking of it. They say they get a crowd of about 30,000 for that. Of course, there's a couple of parades this weekend, and folks are already getting in line for that. But the boats and the kayaks and the canoes and the water taxis are all traversing up and down the Chicago River. Happy St. Patrick's Day weekend from all of us. Big story this week, of course, was the college admissions scandal. There was the terrible news out of Christchurch. There's other political news. But the one thing I think a lot of us can sort of get our heads around that we all seem to have a formed opinion on was what happened in the case of Felicity Huffman's daughters and Lori Loughlin's daughters, and then those other kids who we don't know so well. About 35 families evidently participated in this scandal. Then there was about 9 mostly Ivy League but elite school coaches that were part of a scheme organized by this company to get people in. You know whose name came up in this story this week? Was Phil Mickelson, the golfer. Phil Mickelson said, "Oh no, we use that service too." But Mickelson said, "We didn't bribe anybody. We didn't pay off anybody. We use that company legitimately," which makes me wonder if there were folks who really were unwittingly participating in the scheme, or maybe you would give them money and they would counsel you and coach you on how to get in, but they wouldn't bribe a lacrosse coach. And Mickelson says that's his case. And by the way, Phil, if you're listening, I think whatever the case was, you're smart to get in front of it, right? You're smart to volunteer that information. We had a guest on this week named Carrie Bahar from KSB College Consulting. We invited her back into our studio. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me back.
Hot topic these days.
Very.
So after the week has come and gone, you were in our studio for a while and took calls and heard texts. Where's your head on this business today?
Well, I think that it's important to differentiate admissions from what's happening at the colleges and universities that don't involve the admissions office. And so I've read a lot and heard a lot about how students and parents are mad at the entire universities. And I really think it's important to remember the education students are receiving has nothing to do with decisions made in the admissions office.
In other words, if we let a subpar student in, it's not like the professors then all dumb down the classes for that person.
No, absolutely. And I would assume I'm not sure, but I would assume that the professors are holding those students to the same standards that anyone has been admitted, and that's what's important to remember.
So you don't put a lot of stock in the 8 students who are suing because they feel that their degree from Stanford is now not worth what it used to be.
They certainly have the right to do that, and so I don't want to make a comment on...
Oh, I do. I mean, come on.
Well, I feel like it's overstepping the situation a little bit because, again, the schools are still very good institutions and provide wonderful services to the students, to the public, and that needs to be remembered as well.
So what do you do for a living again?
So I'm a college consultant, so I help students and families navigate the admissions process.
And how do you do that?
So I work with students starting in the high school years, early high school years, and help them strategize courses, make sure that they're getting in all testing they would need for potential schools they're interested in, work with families, and help students get together resumes, essays.
What do you recommend for parents and students? Should they take the college prep classes that are the hardest and maybe get a B, or should they take the basic algebra class and get the A?
So if a student is capable of being in the honors AP or IB curricula and can get A's or B's, they are at the right level. If they get C's or below, those letters in front of it of a class is not going to do any good. But you can't get through, if you have the ability to take the upper level classes, to skirt through without showing that course rigor is actually going to be detrimental.
What do you make of students who do a bunch of things? Or should the students focus on just a few things? Be a one or two sport athlete. Only do orchestra. Don't do everything. Should you do a few things deeply or do a whole bunch of things diversely?
A few things deeply is always the best. But all students in high school need some type of community service. Colleges, universities, really the world likes to see that high school students are still thinking about something other than themselves. And that's pretty universal. A lot of schools have minimum requirements for graduation of so many hours of community service. Making sure you have that, but then, yes, I think it's always better to focus on a few and go deep with those, pick up leadership skills and whatnot.
How impressive are sports or important are sports on the resume?
If a student excels at it, yes. You don't have to have a sport to get into school, absolutely not. If a student excels, then that's where their time should be spent. But if you don't have a sport, you're still the world is still open to you if you have other
qualifications. Is being an orchestra as important? Say I was 4 years on the soccer team or 4 years in jazz band. Same thing?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The school isn't making judgment calls when they look at your credentials saying, well, why didn't he or she do this? It's what did he or she do, where do those talents lie, and how deep did they go?
Lots of texts since you were in our studio last. Question for KSB College Admissions Advisor. What is her opinion about kids who take off a year between high school and college?
So those are known as gap years, and it is certainly a popular option. It's a much more popular option in the European countries than it is in the United States, but you definitely see it growing. I think it is a decision made by the family and the students. A downside of gap years is that if a student is admitted to a school, that college awards merit award to the student, the college may not hold that scholarship for the year the student's out on gap.
But do they look negatively on that application?
They do not, because actually you don't declare, most students don't declare they're doing a gap year until after they're accepted at a school and then defer. So you're already into a school and then for most of the gap programs, you're applying at the same time and then make that decision.
My number is 312-981-7200. You've got a question, a comment, an observation about this story this week, or maybe what you and your kid went through, or maybe what you're going through right now. Lots of texts like this from your last visit. I was a Boy Scout and Girl Scout leader and assistant leader. If one of my scouts went to a college interview, scouting was usually mentioned. Most of my kids were in band or orchestra. They were in foreign language clubs, often sports. But scouting seemed important, even if they didn't get the Eagle or Gold awards. Is that something that gives you a leg up?
Well, I think what's beneficial about scouting that could be said for a lot of other endeavors is probably the teamwork that comes out of it. And again, putting others, organizations, and efforts above yourself. And that's probably what's beneficial about something like that.
847 said, this has nothing to do with the students going to Stanford. This has to do with the moms going on Facebook and saying their son or daughter goes to Stanford. Harper College is the best 2-year college in the United States, and it's affordable. Signed, Kurt. What do you make of going to a junior college?
You know, I think community colleges absolutely have a place in the education system, and for some, they're definitely the right step.
If I graduated from a JC, does that make it more difficult to get to the University of Illinois or Northwestern?
No, actually, and many schools, particularly the state schools, have pathways identified with community colleges to help those students transition from community college after 2 years into the graduate program.
I was of an opinion that they wanted 4 years of tuition, not two, from any given student. So maybe graduating from Harper might actually set you back a little bit. That's
it
not,
could. I mean, one problem is that if you go through the community college, if you go to a community college for 2 years and your intent is to then go on and get a four-year degree, you do need to be careful about the courses you're taking and make sure that those would be approved by the four-year college. Otherwise, yes, you could get set back in status.
You said last time you were in our studio that some parents had asked you to write the essays for their kids, looked you square in the face and said, well, then you write the essay. And they offered you money for that service?
Presumably so. I'm not sure we ever got the conversation about what they
were. It's a service you don't offer.
I do not offer.
Do people do that?
I would yes. There are definitely sources where students can get essays written for them, even on the internet. You can buy essays.
College application essays.
You can buy college application essays that have, quote, been successful. I'm sure that students can go online and find others that are out there. A lot of universities put what they call essays that have worked online, and it's very easy to get pre-written essays.
This person says, John, there's too much plagiarism happening with the college application process. A lot of moms and dads are writing those essays.
That's very true. And I will tell you that I can absolutely spot a mile away, and so can admissions officers, if it's being written by a 17-year-old in a 17-year-old's voice, if it's being written by someone in their 40s.
It's more obvious to a seasoned reader like you than maybe the parents and kid realize.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
815, John, my nephew was a straight-A student all 4 years in AP and honors classes, cross-country track 4 years in the economics club, was in National Honor Society, 35 on his ACT, still did not get into UCLA. Something's not right with the system now. He was an Eagle Scout. Is that evidence that something's wrong with the system, or there were a bunch of other kids with similar backgrounds, and that's just the way it is.
So, I mean, I think something that we haven't mentioned is the use of these common applications, right? So when you're looking at California, you're dealing with two things, the in-state versus out-of-state population. So I'm not sure if your caller was somebody in California or living elsewhere, but certainly California, as any state school, has quotas they have to fill in terms of in-state, out-of-state population. And then you have electronic applications, which makes it crazy accessible. So in the case of the California schools, they receive, you know, close to 150-some thousand applications a year. So it's going to be hard for any individual, particularly out-of-state, to get into that. And then when you add the issues of fraud on top of it, obviously it magnifies.
Okay, but I mean, we have that version in-state, people trying to get into, good grief, the University of Illinois, to say nothing of Northwestern or U of C. That's just the way it is. You do not feel that those kids who are super, because a lot of us whose kids or friends' kids did not get into the U of I and who busted their butt with that goal and achieved for 4 years did not get into U of I. You don't think that's a problem per se?
I think there's a couple ways to look at it. One, I think we're very blessed to live in a state with such an incredible state university. And with an incredible state university and that has some very top programs in the country, it's going to make it more selective in terms of admissions. So I think you need to take that point of view. I think the idea that just because I live in the state of Illinois, I'm entitled to that, to be at that school. I mean, that's an interesting argument. I don't think we can overlook the fact that there's still 75% of the population at University of Illinois Champaign is in state.
Really?
Absolutely.
I would have guessed it was 50%.
No, it's still 75%.
25%. I would have guessed we're from China.
Well, I would say that they do have quite, I mean, every state school, again, is trying to increase diversity, and Illinois does have certainly a lot of out-of-state, but I do believe, in looking at the recent numbers, freshmen from other U.S. states actually decreased, and the international students decreased in the freshman class this year.
There was a lot of pressure for them, though, to ease up on that, because they were making a lot of money with out-of-country and out-of-state, yeah. And maybe that's just a response to that. This says, King John, I don't have kids. But the schools knew what was going on and should be accountable. Maybe they don't owe $500 million, but it does devalue the degree. Do you think that what do you make of the complicity of the schools in this scandal?
Well, I haven't yet heard that the actual admissions officers knew of this.
I have not either.
So that I'd say the schools probably didn't know. It sounds like the schools were duped right along with the public and everybody else. I've not yet heard that anybody in the admissions offices at these schools was aware of it because it was handled through the coaches. There's a different admissions process, unfortunately, for those athletes.
And what they were doing was saying, okay, you can be on the team, and then you never play on the team, but at least now you've gotten in as a result. John, make the parents who paid in for the college entrance scandal fork over the same amount of money that they put their kids in school and put that in a college fund for underprivileged kids. So if I paid that company $50,000 plus $50,000 in tuition, here's $100,000 for a scholarship for somebody else.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. Okay. If you've got a question, comment, observation, here's your chance. 312-981-7200. We are talking a little bit about the scandal, but trying not just to reflect on that, but maybe to do you some favors as well. In our studio is Carrie Bahar from KSB College Consulting, talking off the air about applicants to the University of Illinois that didn't get in. By the way, here's Uncle John just patting you all on the head and shoulder, and it goes like this. Okay, so you busted your butt, you got good grades, you volunteered, you were in the economics club, you ran cross country for 4 years, you didn't get to U of I. That doesn't mean you wasted 4 years. That means you got good grades for 4 years, ran cross country, and were in the economics club. What a great way to spend 4 years. To heck with U of I if they don't want you. Indiana's got a lovely campus. I mean, I don't know that that makes anybody feel better that's in that circumstance, but that is true. Here's a binge watch recommendation from me. Go to the Joint Relief Institute's website. And there you will see what I'm describing as the feel-good video of 2019. Because there on the front page of the Joint Relief Institute website is a video of people who have had knee pain, just like you. One guy says after visiting the Joint Relief Institute, he came home, went to sleep that night, and went to bed at 8 and got up the next morning at 5. He had 9 pain-free hours of sleep. He cannot remember the last time he did that. I was so happy for him. There's a postal worker who's sitting there, and he said 37 years on the job. Was experiencing extreme pain in both knees for years. That's a quote. Now he says for the first time in the last 4 years, his pain's down to a 1 or a 2. He's so happy. I want you to be happy. Get rid of that knee pain. This is a non-surgical, pain-free process that your insurance is probably going to pay for, and they've got a specialist that handles Medicare and insurance claims just for you. Visit jointreliefinstitute.com. Carrie Bahar is in our studio with KSB College Consulting. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with Pamela, 312-981-7200. Hi, Pam. You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi there. Good morning. I've been listening to your station for a while, and this is a really, really harsh topic, as I'm very passionate about it. I mean, I know a lot of I'm older, and I know a lot of parents. I'm in Illinois, Chicago, and I know a lot of parents that have donated things to schools, and their child got in because of donations. I mean, you're talking, this is something that's been going on for 1,000 years, okay? My uncle, I'm going to tell you his little story. My uncle was a Jesuit priest. My two sisters went to California State on a scholarship because he got two of them, okay? And he told them, if you don't do the grades, you're out. He was very strict.
You said to my producer off the air, how is this different than donating a building? If I write a check, I might get my kid in. Let's let her react to that, Carrie. How is this different than a rich person says, okay, here's the John Williams Library. Guess what? My kids are in the school now.
Well, I think that's not ethical either. And I wish that didn't happen. I think a difference in that, and if schools choose to do that, is that it's not being hidden, right? The money's on the table and saying, hey, we'll give you this. I can also tell you, though, I certainly know of examples of families who have tried to do that,
and it
did not work.
Wow.
So it's not universal. I'm not going to tell you it isn't still out there.
It's weird, isn't it? Because say you want to make the donation and you do, and then say your kid gets in, maybe because he should or shouldn't. So did Jared Kushner really belong in Harvard, or just was it a coincidence that his family donated $2.5 million?
I know nothing about Jared Kushner's academic background, so I don't know. I mean, clearly, when a family does that and that comes to light, then yes, it's going to take away from anything the student did achieve.
Here's my takeaway this week. Here's my solution. You can buy your way in. Just be transparent about it. I mean, what bugs people in a way isn't that is anybody surprised that famous people? You would think Stanford would love to, that USC would love to have famous people's kids at their school. What great advertising for the school. Just be transparent about it. And if your kid doesn't have the grades, write a check. And if $1 million goes to the library, then that's a good thing. And really, is USC going to be that much worse because Lori Loughlin's daughters are there? Maybe not.
Right.
Maybe because of those videos they make, but maybe not because they're sitting in an algebra class. We are out of time. If people want to reach Kerry Bahar at KSB College Consulting, I believe they go to KSB College Consulting.
KSB College, yes, collegeconsulting.com.
.com. Kerry, thanks for coming into our studio again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I'll probably call you next week.
I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Thank you, Don Kleppen. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio looking down on the beautiful Kelly Green Chicago River. It won't hit 60 degrees, according to my weather app, for the next 10 days. That flirtation with it was so nice this week. On Thursday, we recorded The Mincing Rascals, judged by the Headliners Club to be the best podcast in the city this year. We like to broadcast part of the podcast for you on Saturdays. It features Eric Zorn, the columnist from the Tribune, and Scott Stantis, their editorial cartoonists, R. Steve Bertrand and Patty Vasquez. The gang kicked around a number of topics for you this week. I think you'll enjoy The Mincing Rascals podcast. Here, I'm talking to the gang about the race for mayor. Last week, Eric Zorn said that he was happy to see that there were only 5 weeks between the general election, if you will, and the runoff election on April 2nd for mayor. Just enough time, he said, to get a feel for the issues and remaining candidates. Scott Stantis felt maybe 3 weeks would be enough.
Oh, yeah.
Given what we've heard in the last couple of weeks, I'm inclined to go with Scott on this.
Can we vote today?
Yeah, we know what we know. We know all we need to know.
I have to stand up for the Tribune's forum the other day. We had a debate Tuesday morning at the Tribune, and it was 75 minutes of civilized exchange without interruptions and name calling. Maybe boring, some people might
maybe
say.
Maybe because it wasn't on TV.
But in a high mind.
It was streamed.
Yeah. We had good web traffic on it. I think these women saw, both of them and their advisors saw that debate and realized that this was just degrading to both of them.
You know, I think it's interesting and frankly disappointing that Toni Preckwinkle and her people would try to criticize me for being successful. I find it highly ironic.
You know, I grew up poor, too. That's not the point. The point is what you choose to do with your time and talent as
indeed
an adult.
And it was a shameful. I ran extended excerpts from that little. I thought it was, and then that's when I wrote that column. Like, this is horrible. We need to get this over.
And
with.
How many times did she say, frankly? There was a disparity right between you and somebody else.
I said 29, and someone else counted 32. Frankly,
the candidate you're talking about is
Lori Lightfoot. She just has a weakness for frankly.
And I hate that because it implies that anything they said before that wasn't.
Only
if you say it every single second, then everything is being frank.
She didn't get a chance to qualify everything as being honest. Well, what did you guys make, though, of that spin out of that, where there was an issue about Toni Preckwinkle dog whistling Lori Lightfoot's orientation? She, when asked to say something about her opponent that was good, really made sure everybody knew Lori Lightfoot is gay.
She's open and honest about her LGBTQ orientation. And I think it's really important in this country that we be respectful of differences and that we understand that all of us matter. And that there is dignity in each and every one of us. And there has been so much discrimination and prejudice and homophobia in our country.
Was Preckwinkle being sincere there, do you think?
I'm going to say yes. I think Toni Preckwinkle's record on LGBTQ issues is excellent. I think she honestly does respect Lori Lightfoot.
You don't think she was trying to play both sides of the coin there?
I don't think so. But, you know, I mean, this is a question that was bound to come up. Anyone who's ever watch television in this town knows Carol Marine loves that question, and she's gotten some people on it.
Fair enough. What do you think, Scott?
I think it was a dog whistle. I don't think there's any question. The minute it came out of her mouth, I was like, oh, she didn't.
Hands on hips.
She did. So, yeah, I think it was a dog whistle.
It could be. I mean, in talking about Lori Lightfoot's openness about her relationship and you know, her lifestyle, or life in her circles, and this is true, we know a lot of people who are not public about who they're with. She just isn't accustomed to being able to even say anything.
If this hadn't come from a politician who has a record of being very supportive of gay rights, that might be one thing. But I don't think that's Toni Preckwinkle. I mean, I think she has a record of being pro-gay rights and supportive of all of that. So I took her at her word. Yeah.
She has, but, I mean, look at the numbers. Look at the breakdown of that election and the districts that Willie Wilson won. Pretty sure I'm right on this, that a lot of traditionally black churches tend to run very conservative on those issues, on social issues. if you want to win those 17, how many, 18, how many awards?
He won 14 awards, and he came out and endorsed Lori Lightfoot on Friday and was asked about this issue, and he said something to the effect of, you know, it's I've been discriminated against my life. It's time for us to get beyond discrimination. It was a pretty righteous thing that Willie Wilson said, and I think that that message will not be – I don't think that this issue of Lori Lightfoot being gay is going to be a big factor in this election.
Maybe not. Well, you know, we did a little unscientific poll. It was like 94% of the respondents at WGNRadio.com said it's not an issue.
Oh, great.
You know, her orientation.
I think her being gay – will be more of a motivating factor to bring people out to vote for her than it will to discourage voters from coming out.
You know, I think embedded in that, though, is what Preckwinkle said, and that is it's she didn't say incumbent, but she suggested that it really is important that people who are gay come out as gay if you are a public figure. I can think of a number of politicians and personalities in Chicago and on the national stage. We talked about that Peoria congressman last week who people questioned his orientation.
We talked to him.
Yeah, we did. And we didn't bring that up because I thought, oh, hell, it doesn't matter now. But that's out there, too. Here's the point. Is it necessary? Is it important? What is it about their exposing their orientation? Should they or should they not? Is that a fair thing to judge them on?
Is it? I mean, I've always eaten a big bowl of I don't care in the morning on stuff like this because this is something that's between you and whoever, right? And so for me, orientation never, ever played. And I recognize that there are bigotries and there are...
Well, that's it. Pardon me, Scott, but just answer this. If you are a person in a legislative body or an executive in a governmental body, you have an opportunity to control people's lives. So if you're a celebrity, if you're Scott Standis, we don't care. It doesn't matter. But if I'm a voting person, if I'm making decisions for the people in Illinois or Chicago, then maybe it is helpful to know what your orientation is. Republicans who are gay and don't say that, I think, are doing a disservice to themselves or the truth of their party platform.
I think we're going to get past that in the next 20 years, maybe. I think the Democratic Party. I think the Democratic Party is largely past that. I'm going to be curious to see the extent to which, Mayor Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, how his being gay plays in Iowa. And New Hampshire, Iowa's a very conservative state, whether that's going to be a factor for voters.
Well, just the fact that he's running, and more than that, he's gay, he's married.
Right.
You know, I think that's a big part, too.
In Alabama, the current governor has had a long-term girlfriend. It's one of the worst-kept secrets in Alabama, and she won with almost 60% of the vote.
Not exactly the same thing, but the point is, what, that it's not traditional, right, and it might upset some people?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
And in Alabama?
Alabama, you would think that this would be the death knell of any political career.
I've always wondered how that might affect Cory Booker. I've liked him, and I don't know what's going on there, and I thought, oh, I wonder if that's going to be a card somebody will play.
I'm even struggling with how to put the
words. Have you heard
together
about Rock Hudson?
Right, exactly.
I heard Liberace.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think that we are going to move past this. I think that in 20 years, it's not going to matter.
But I hope it doesn't take 20.
But I think to your point, John, in order to get to that 20 years, that people do have to be honest about who they are and forthcoming. And I don't know if you'd be forthcoming. Just be true to yourself. I think that affects how
says,
you govern, too.
Are you gay? And say, yeah.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay.
But I also say if someone says, are you gay? And you say, you know what? That's my personal life. I'm not going to discuss that. I think you should be entitled to do that, too.
Of course.
So, John, I guess I don't agree with you.
I want to move on. That's our Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis, part of the Mincing Rascals, which you can listen to wherever you listen to finer podcasts. It's funny because the Cory Booker thing was just kind of in the back of my mind. He's single, and folks have wondered and whispered about that forever. We recorded that on Thursday. Friday, I'm looking online, and there's a story about Rosario Dawson and Cory Booker are dating. So, just, you know, if that matters to you at all, there's just that other wrinkle of news that happened since we recorded the Mincing Rascals. It's 11:22. Thank you, Steve Bertrand, part of the Mincing Rascals crew from WGN Radio News. I get a chance to talk to him during my show. And, of course, Steve is also, all right, Griff, Steve is also the host of the Wintrust Business Lunch from noon to 1 on WGN Radio weekday. Steve's out of town this week, so I'm going to do the noon to 1 show and then continue on until 3. This week on Man of the People, Pat Tomasulo gets back to his Italian roots. Who's up for a little bocce ball? That's tonight at 10 on WGN TV. By the way, Joe, I don't know if you're near your microphone over there, but after the news at 11:30, we'll do our Vibe Score segment where we talk about things that are of interest to us and ask everybody else to chime in. We score them on a scale of 1 to 100. Are you going to be able to participate in that segment, sir?
Of course. Okay. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Are you going to make the thing you want us to vibe on colorful basketball shoes that don't match or that do but don't match the uniforms?
Do you want me to? It sounds like you're really trying to push that on me.
Don't use that one because that's mine, okay?
Okay, all right.
You either love them or you hate them.
Scratch that off.
It's 11:26. It's a lovely day downtown Chicago. Earlier this week, our Steve Cochran, I played part of this earlier, I'll finish it now. Our Steve Cochran asked his morning show audience to text in what their quirks were, their little idiosyncrasies and eccentricities, and it was pretty funny. And some of them you can relate to, some of them you can't. As Brenda and I were driving down the road listening, I found myself just getting wrapped into this thing, thinking, yeah, that's me, no, that's not me, yeah, that's me, no, that's not me. Let's pick it up where we left it off, Griff.
815, I had a wicked case of food poisoning about 10 years ago from a salad. I haven't touched a piece of lettuce since then. I'm angry at lettuce. 847, anything I eat in a bun, I eat upside down. 312, I was George Costanza before he was. I have to take off my shirt when I use the toilet. 815, I wear my underwear and socks inside out on the smooth side next to me, and the rough side is sewn up. That's not, listen, I don't do that, but that's not a terrible idea.
But what
that's
about the tags?
630, I make sure all the Phillips head screws that are in anything on the walls, pictures, anything that we put together, the slots on the screw heads are all facing in the same direction. If it's wall plates in the same room, all of them have to have the slot in the same direction. I won't loosen a screw if for some reason I can't get it in the right position by tightening it. Okay.
Boy.
630, I will drink only the foam from Coca-Cola. I pour it into a short glass of ice. I drink up the foam quickly, and then I dump everything else out. 312, I cannot eat a salad from a flat plate. It's got to be in a bowl. 312, I must have a small towel under my feet in the car so the mat doesn't get wet or dirty. 847, I must stop in the bathroom before going to bed, even if I don't have to go. Otherwise, the cat will wait by the bathroom door until I actually can. 708, I hate crooked bumper stickers. I don't care if little Timmy's the honor roll. You're an idiot that you can't center the sticker. 773, I am all of the texts you read this morning. I'm checking into rehab. Bye.
Listen to the Steve Cochran Show weekday mornings on WGN Radio. Thank you, Mr. C. The idea that you have to have the shoes lined up and facing in the same direction, right on the right, left on the left, I understand that. I don't always adhere to that, but I'm cognizant of that in my world.
I actually think most of those are pretty understandable. The only thing that's weird about it is the extremity with which people feel these things. Like, a lot of those are like, I could see taking some pleasure in that or like preferring it that way.
Right.
But if you are, it's mandatory, that's when it gets
weird.
Right.
That's when you have a problem. Like all of the light switches have to be in the same position down for off. And if one of them is up because you have two switches that control it, you've got to rearrange it so they're all in the same position.
The, what was it? The slots in the
screws on the plates of your electrical outlets. I totally understand.
I like that. Yeah, that's funny. I never even thought about that.
And as he was doing that, I thought, well, the one that I have, I don't think anybody knows because I haven't announced it, but when I get a spoon, I always want the thinnest tine possible. I want my spoon to be very thin. And if there's a bunch
thin.
Of spoons, right, I will, like some spoons have bigger shovels and they're thicker, and I want the thinnest possible lip on my spoon. And I will go through all of our spoons. I don't know if Brenda's noticed this lately. It's getting worse lately.
There's thick spoons just strewn about the room. They're everywhere. I was searching for the thinnest spoon.
That's what I do. When I have my cereal in the morning, I know a spoon is thinner than another spoon, and I will search for it.
You know, I actually like a small spoon over a big spoon, but
I guess somebody has a spoon eccentricity.
But I've never considered the thickness, though. That's fascinating. But it's all weird. I don't know why I prefer the small.
Right. There's no right answers here. We're all wrong. It's 11:30. All right, Don's going to do the news. Our Vibe Score segment's a lot of fun, too. That comes next. By the way, the Mincing Rascals in the podcast also kicked around the idea that they're floating in Illinois. We're not going to tax you for the gas you buy. We're also going to tax you for the miles you drive. That's how they're going to get more money for the roads. They'll know how far you drove any day, anywhere in the state, and you'll be taxed according to how many miles you drive. You love that? You hate that? It's in the water. Just be ready. That may be coming. And then there's an app. We interviewed the co-creator of it called Appalition. And what the app does is enable you to round up your purchases on your credit card. The extra money goes to a fund to help pay the bail of people that are in Cook County. You'll love that or you hate that. Very interesting conversation with the Mincing Rascals. Stop your Saturdays at this time, producer Griff plays a song for us, and we chat a little bit about it. It's our Vibe Score segment. We all get a vibe from at least the music Griffin plays, and then some other topics. We score them on a scale of 1 to 100. All right, Griff, what were we listening to there?
That was Jenny Lewis, singer-songwriter, her song called Wasted Youth. And she has an album from the forthcoming album, On the Line, that comes out about a week from now.
1 to 100, Don Kleppen, rate it. Go.
82, so relatable. Wasted.
Somewhere in Arizona, Joe Brand, go.
I'll go with the temperature today. I'll go with 78. Kind of a mama and the papa's theme or vibe I felt on, and I'm a fan of that music, so... The lyrics still took a little bit to gather, but yeah, I'll go high 70s.
Yeah, I'm an 80 on this one, Griff. Not too bad.
85. I think she's great. She was the lead singer of Rilo Kiley, sort of a seminal band in the 90s and 2000s for a lot of people. And she's got a bunch of solo albums now. Just reliably really good. And sometimes those sorts of artists get lost in the shuffle. There's a lot of bands where I feel like they put out just really high quality stuff album after album, and people start to talk about it less because it's like, yeah, of course it's great, but it's worth noting. Always like perking up and being like, oh, they're still great, by the way.
And what was the name of that artist again?
Just a heads up, Jenny Lewis.
Jenny Lewis. I wondered if you were going to play the new Vampire Weekend for us. You going to feature that sometime?
I thought about it too. I really like that song. It's called Sunflower. Also another one called Big Blue. The music video came out this week. Did you see that?
I did. I found myself listening to
directed
it.
Directed by Jonah Hill. And
I think it's pretty... I really enjoyed it.
Co-starring Jerry Seinfeld, which is fantastic. Yeah. But we played their last single, and I thought, but I might do it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm getting very excited for that album, so we'll see.
I'm hopeful for it anyway. Okay, here we go now. You will notice in the NC2A's college basketball tournaments and some of the pro players these days wear basketball shoes that do not match the uniform. Sometimes they're pink, sometimes they're multicolored, sometimes they're neon yellow, and sometimes the left foot does not match the right foot. And I was wondering what the gang thought about that as a fashion statement or as a measure of not team unity. Joe Brand, sports, go.
I don't love it, but I don't really think we should criticize the players for doing it. It's the same thing as when they wear a different colored sleeve underneath their matching jerseys. I don't love it, but I think that's just my OCD kicking in. You talk about all the things that people were complaining about on the Steve Cochran show. I mean, that's me. My shoes need to match my shirt. My pants need to match my hat. It's a terrible thing to get into.
I don't know how they got to that point. It just seemed to me like college coaches are so buttoned up on stuff like this. Of course, we're Penn State, we wear blue and white, and then you have a blue and white sneaker. We're Illinois, you wear an orange and a white or a white sneaker. You can't be wearing a pink sneaker.
Now, it does relate to Steve's segment, which is if you can have a preference, sure. But if you have interest in regulating what goes on their feet,
I can't take my eyes off of their shoes.
No, well, that's your problem. I would recommend an MRI or something. I don't know what the score is, but I'm extremely on one end of this. It was just like, let them wear what they want to wear.
Okay, 100 is let them wear what they want to wear.
100.
Okay, I'm a 43 on this. I think it doesn't look good, and I just think we're all together. We all wear the same color shoe. Unless you're Zion Williamson, and then you need a team of people to craft a special shoe for you.
Is that why we struggle so much on this show? Because we haven't coordinated our shoes? What color shoes are you wearing, Don? Because I've been feeling off all day.
Light brown, okay. Sort of a taupe.
Yeah, that's actually what I got, too.
Nice.
That's
weird.
But I've got the blue. And Joe, what color shoes are you wearing?
I've got one white and one yellow.
Man.
All right. Maybe I'm the only one that noticed that or who is... I don't even know how hostile I am about it, Griffin. I just say I'm intrigued by the phenomenon.
Sure, yeah.
There's a guy who plays for DePaul, and his left shoe is like Jackson Pollock. Is that the guy who did the splatter paint?
Yeah.
And then the other shoe is like another one that doesn't match the first one.
Give me another modern artist to compare the other shoe to.
I've run my gamut. That's all I got for you.
Jasper Johns, De Kooning.
Okay, fine. You know artists. Joe, what have you got?
I'll go all day.
Joe, go. Bren, change the subject.
Well, yeah, to echo the, well, not so much changing it, to kind of echo the whole March Madness thing going on, but this year Illinois' team is going to be the Bradley Braves heading to the tournament. And John, I know you know Peoria, and it's very near and dear to your heart, but kind of an odd move they did today with Dave Reynolds, their longtime writer for the Peoria Journal. He's been there for 29 years. I'm pretty sure he's a Hall of Fame voter, and they limited his credentials, basically, saying limited what he's able to do, who he's able to interview during their possibly biggest run of their franchise. And their only reasoning is he didn't promote the Bradley brand. And when you're a team, a school, and you're saying that to a media outlet, a newspaper that has to be neutral, I just really have trouble figuring out the reasoning behind that.
Well, you got to believe there's more to it than that. If the Bradley Braves are limiting the Peoria Journal Star's coverage of their team, it can't just be because the guy wasn't on brand enough. You know what I mean? I mean,
I get that, but wouldn't their reasoning, I mean, doesn't that reasoning just scream that it's not the right answer?
Right,
I mean, to say they don't promote our, that's not their job. The job is to report the news.
Right. Right. If it's something else, come up with a better excuse than this, because this makes you guys look puny and small. And super. Right. And by the way, you're going to the tournament, so you get the last laugh. If the Journal Star got it wrong and didn't give you enough love all year, well, guess what? You're in the elite. You're in the NCAA basketball tournament. You won the Missouri Valley. So
right.
You win.
You proved them wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, on a scale. And by the way, there just seems to be more and more of that, right? I mean, I'm surprised to hear this story, Joe, but we certainly see it in the political world these days. This business of limiting or punishing journalists because you don't like what they write, I think the readers will punish them. You know, go ahead, Joe.
It's just that's what a shame is, because you'll probably see journalists and writers now limiting to what they do because they don't. They're worried about their jobs and worrying about what they want to say, and they can't, you know, really express their true feelings.
Okay, on a scale of 1 to 100, 100 is I completely support the Bradley Braves, who I love. And 0, which is, boy, what a boneheaded move. I'm giving this a 9. A 9. Griffin, go.
Yeah, 5.
5. Even into the newsroom. Don Kleppen, go.
2.5,
yeah,
man.
You got to be, man. You're in the newsroom.
Exactly.
Joey, where are you on this, buddy?
I'll go under or in single digits as well. I'll go 7.
You know, I don't know what the deal is, so maybe they've got a better explanation than it smells like so far, but it doesn't smell good. Into the newsroom. Don, you got anything for us to kick around, my friend?
Yes, sir. I was looking at this article. I was just considering this may be a topic we brush on at some point, but I don't think so. Basically, there was a New York Times article that said newlyweds, instead of going on honeymoons, they're going on uni-moons, where they can't agree on a post-wedding destination for their honeymoon, so they each go their separate ways to a different location and enjoy that time individually. And I just wanted to vibe on if we think newlyweds going, taking separate trips, doing their individual thing, is like 100 being, oh yeah, that's great, it's a new age couple thing to do, the absence makes the heart grow fonder, all of this, and then zero being like, you guys just got married and you already can't agree on something, you can't stand each other, like what's going on here?
What's your score on that, Don?
I'm going to go ahead and give it actually a, I would say a, actually a 30. I do think there's something about like with the honeymoon, I mean, even not agreeing on a place to go, like I think just spending some alone time or spending some focused time with that person, I kind of feel that to be kind of the point, but this is speaking as a single guy, so I don't really know.
No, I don't think you're far off there. Where are you on the, by the way, Joe, this is a near, are you guys going on a unimoon?
Yeah, well, Don, your check is in the mail, and hopefully her, my fiance is listening right now, but no, I don't really see where this is going to go. That's the last thing we have not really taken a step towards with the whole wedding planning and everything. I've always stressed that I want to go to Australia, something exotic, something different. When would you ever go? I can't see me wanting to go on a uni moon, though. I just really can't. I guess call me old-fashioned, but it's, I guess I want to spend time with my new wife after I get married.
Imagine that. Isn't this kind of a red flag?
That's what I would
think. I mean, if I'm the parents and I paid a lot of money for that wedding, and then I said, now wait, you're going to Australia and he's going to Tempe?
Right.
Hello?
You guys are just going on separate trips.
Then why did I just pay for an open bar for 3 hours?
Yeah.
Stop it already. But, you know, my problem is I don't understand marriage and wedding traditions these days anyway. Mm. From the engagement party, like where the parents all jump out from behind the curtains and go, surprise, you're engaged. I don't understand any. I understand destination bachelor parties. I don't understand those.
You make it sound like that's how they tell someone they're engaged.
That would be
you're
terrifying.
Engaged.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing. Like, holy cow, what do you mean, Mom and Dad?
When this is a thing, when you ask her to marry you, or she asks you to marry her, and then everybody else is there, and then they all go hooray, and then there's drinks. It's just amazing to me how expensive and drawn out the process is. Yeah. I'll just say that.
That's true, but so I'm always in favor of changing up the tradition around marriage if it in some way limits the amount that you have to pay or the people attending your wedding have to pay. I like those kinds of things.
The cost.
But I don't think that this really accomplishes that. If anything, it's like two trips. So
doubles it, yeah. I would
maybe
think
doubles
so.
It, but yeah.
Could you imagine going to a wedding and thinking, do we pay for Karen's uni moon or do we pay for Mark's uni moon?
Right, oh, and right. What if one of them gets like way more? Just generally the right. Favored part of the couple.
Yeah, or one has like a really lavish trip planned and the other one just wants to go to like, you
well,
know.
Well, that's it. I went to Australia and you went to, you know, East Peoria for a weekend.
Wisconsin Dells. Exactly.
Hard to say who won there.
All right. Well, the unimoon is a brand new concept for us, Don. I'm completely unfamiliar with it. Thank you for the heads up on that.
No trouble.
It's 11:52. This is WGN. 11:55. This is WGN. Just a quick note about my social media pages. I'm WGN King John on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. By the way, if you follow me on social media throughout the week, we will ask you to tell us what your bright side is, something good that's happened in your world. We do a segment on Friday on the radio around 2:40 where we ask you to call in and tell us what your bright side is. It's a real feel-good segment. And we're randomly handing out to those of you that follow us on social media some brand-new bright side pins with a happy, smiling sunshine on there. You can see it on my Twitter page right now, and I'm really happy about it because people are wearing them, and it's just a nice little added bonus for a feature that really does feel good. A woman called in yesterday and said that her, and I don't remember the exact details, but it goes something like this. Two people who reconnected after years on Facebook. One ended up donating a kidney to another person's daughter. And it was just like, wow. It was very random and amazingly generous. And the woman who was involved in this called in and she was so excited about it. And I said, oh my God, we're sending you a bright side pin. And she said, oh, that's awesome. And I said, no, the pins aren't awesome. You people are. So WGN King John on Twitter. I posted this morning some pictures of the river from 18 stories up as it was being dyed green on Facebook and on Instagram as well. WGN King John. Amy Guth is in the studio now. So what's coming up your way?
Well, we're going to talk a little more about Boeing. That was such a big story this week. And, you know, there were a lot of lessons there, you know, crisis management and controlling a narrative and just the safety issues. And like, there were so many layers to that story. So we're going to talk a little more about Boeing because that needs more talking about.
I just pitched an interview. I didn't do it. But so people are critical with the way they communicated to people generally about that?
Well, I think the sense is generally like, how does Boeing move forward from here when, you know, this particular 737 MAX jet is one third of their operating income. That's pretty significant. So what do they do now financially? What do they do with the narrative attached to them? Like, there's a lot of holes to dig out of it.
I wonder if they should touch this, too. The Wall Street Journal had a story Thursday, I think it was, and that is that that software update would have been implemented sooner but for the government shutdown.
Oh, how interesting.
And so when we all just say, well, that's politics and it's fairly inconsequential,
not really.
This may have been a deal breaker
or
game changer.
Yeah.
What else are you doing today?
Well, so we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about the restaurant booking app OpenTable. I think we've all encountered that just looking at restaurants online, things like that. There's kind of a battle over who controls that data, who gets that, who finds out about their diners' information. So we're going to take a look at that. And then a really interesting piece from the New York Times. There's research that uncovered a big tobacco scheme to market sugary drinks to children, which is a really fascinating kind of put people in the pipeline of addiction sort of story. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to close up the show talking about Facebook's strategy to respond to crisis and to hate speech. I think that's a timely topic to visit and think about more, because I think there's growing frustration around what Facebook does and does not consider hate speech, especially when we see people taking action and taking lives with that hate speech. So we're going to be taking a look at that.
Have a good show. I'll talk to y'all Monday at 1.